Hey, welcome. Another episode of Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine. My name is John Kulis from the Netherlands, and the date of today is 9 June 2007. And the last week I promised you to discuss the European phase or European cases on UFOs, but that will be postponed for the next week because now I have a special guest, and that is Charlie Giuliani from the best Boston area. For people on PAL Talk and people on Untold Mysteries, he's known because of him doing a column, doing a part of the Untold Mysteries radio show for almost 1.5 years. He's an author of the book Piercing the Fog of 9/11. He is a former school teacher. He has some degrees. I'm definitely going to ask him more about his background. And he is a PAL Talk owner, an admin, a co-admin, together with PhiliNet and many others, CC Media and Natalie. And it's 911 was an inside job room on social issues. And then you have to look for politics and I have to check myself because I'm not sure if I'm saying correct. Human rights, yes, human rights section. That's the one you have to look for on PAL Talk. PALTALK.com is for free. You can download the messenger and you can join and talk with a lot of people around the planet for free and chat. He also has a wonderful webpage called 911blog.org. And recently he has his own radio show, Truth Hurts. Truth Hurts is T, of course, Truth, and then Hurts, H-E-R-T-Z. So it sounds like that you're being hurt, but it's Hurts. Frequency, you know, like frequencies. So hertz.com, truthhurts.com. And there you can read more about Charlie Giuliani. His nickname on PAL Talk is, by the way, Imalek 100. And he's a wealth of information on conspiracies and suppressed in news and everything that has to do with the New World Order agenda. I said enough. Imalek, welcome to the show of Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on bbsradio.com. Welcome.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yes, can you please give me a background check? For what is your background before you went into this doing research in conspiracies and research in alternative history? Because I know that you're also doing some research in strange archaeology as well. And mysteries in general, but let's start for the beginning. For the new people listening on BBS Radio, who are you? What is your background?
Yeah, well, I like you said, I have interest in lots of different things. Anything alternative, basically, because I found out that when you look at the alternative viewpoints in whatever field of study to examine, it's not only far more interesting and bizarre, but it's far more closer to the truth. When you just stick with mainstream, you're shortchanging yourself because mainstream has an axe to grind and is not interested in letting you know the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. As a matter of fact, it's to their advantage to hold lots of important information from you to maintain their monopolies in various fields. So,
you were a school teacher in the past, and you had some degrees. Can you tell me your background? You have a degree
in? Right. Well, this is what got me to look into all this stuff. I in my more gullible days, I had studied theology as well as history. As a matter of fact, I started with theology, but then I switched to history because I realized that that realm was far too gone and corrupt, that there was no future for me in that. Little did I realize at the time, though, that becoming a history major wasn't much better. There wasn't a future there either as far as teaching goes. Taught for a while, but I realized it was just, you know, there was no freedom for you to actually inform students of what's really going on. You could only tout the same garbage that was in the textbook. That's what started me initially. I found out just how corrupt the realm of theology was, that as a minister, quote-unquote, you had no freedom to look into things beyond the confines that were, you know, presented to you. I mean, you couldn't go outside the box, so to speak. You know, you had
what was your first out-of-the-box discovery that you made, that you say, this was my first outrageous claim that I found in investigating something.
Yeah, this is the first and the biggest. I discovered that there's a major conspiracy that's going on within the Christian world. You are required to believe in a doctrine that, believe it or not, and I'm sure many of your listeners will probably find this shocking and probably write me off as a heretic, but hey, whatever. If you look into it, you'll find it unfortunately true, that the Trinity doctrine is a scam. It did not exist prior to the 4th century. It was something that came in as a result of, it was a compromise that was made in the early church. You know, the Christians were being persecuted by the pagans, but ultimately what happened was the Christians compromised with the pagans to stop the persecution, to become more popular, more accepted, and to maximize their profits. They were able to gain more converts from the pagan Roman Empire by embracing a doctrine that was more akin to their ideology and their theology, this triune God concept. The pagans had worshipped a multiplicity of deities, so in order to make Christianity look more appealing to them, they watered it down and embraced this doctrine called the Trinity. To this day, this doctrine is held over people's heads. If you don't believe it, you're ousted from your church and you're fired, or if you're not an employee, you're excommunicated, if you will, or just, you know, thrown out, your name's taken off the books, you're blacklisted, you're viewed worse than the devil himself.
Yeah, by the way, there's a saying that's called, you are accepted in the church for what you believe, but you are kicked out for what you know.
Right, right. And, you know, here's my take on this. Regardless whether you actually believe the Bible to be true or not, isn't the issue here. The issue is that these phony churches are professing to follow the Bible, yet the Trinity doctrine is not in the Bible. It is totally antithetical to what the Bible teaches. So whether you accept the Bible or reject it doesn't matter. For these hucksters to be professing to follow the Bible and yet teaching something that they themselves actually know is not in there is the epitome of hypocrisy. And it actually falls under their own Bible's definition of idolatry, the worship of a false god. They're actually idolatry peddlers. And when I discovered this, I found out very quickly that there's no room for dissension when it comes to this. You cannot even hint that you don't believe in it, or you have totally destroyed your opportunity to ever work in the ministry. And so when I found out that they were lying about something so big and massive like this, I began to wonder, well, gee, you know, if these religious people are doing this, which is supposed to be the arbiters of truth, I wonder if this is going on in other realms. And sure enough, I launched this major investigation campaign, which still continues to this day. And I found out some very not pleasant things, but things that you know, need to be made aware of. People need to be made aware of.
Now, what you also do is you are together with Philinet, who's also the webmaster of 911blog.org. You were having a pal talk room, and because of it, you get worldwide connections and tips of extraordinary information coming towards you. And you also you're starting to share your thoughts and your research, and then slowly people appreciate that. And you actually your room is one of the biggest rooms in the human rights section all the time. And more people like to listen to you. And then slowly your network is growing larger and larger. And then you are deciding to make your own radio show as well. So you are evolving very fast now.
Yeah, I'm actually on three different networks. Well, four, because I'm on yours pretty much every week on your other show you do. So technically I'm on four different networks a week, 15 hours of radio. It's pretty busy.
Yeah, can you tell me all the radio shows, what you do, and what you mostly discuss? Starting with, of course, Truth Hurts Radio. What is that all about?
Yeah, that's my biggest show right now. Hour-wise, I do 10 hours on that a week. It's from Monday to Friday. It runs from 12 p.m. Eastern to 2 p.m. Eastern. And that's mostly politically oriented, although, you know, in the future I'm going to be branching off into other subjects. But right now I haven't had time to really go off on my own tangents because I've just been booking guests back-to-back every show. I don't even have time. I want to do, like, news coverage. I don't even have time to do that. I've just been having guests filling up every moment, which is great, though. I've been having some really important guests. And that's on the Republic Broadcasting Network, by the way. The name of the show is always Truth. Truth Hurts. I've kept the name the same with every network I'm on.
Yeah, for the new people, for the New People, Republican Broadcasting Network were the original founders of, who had this format, what GCN Radio is doing. So what Alex Jones is doing and the founders of that concept, it started with the Republican Broadcast Network. Is that correct?
Right, John Miller had founded it, yeah.
Yes, right. He started it to do this, yeah. So now you get a wider audience, of course, in America now because of it.
Yeah, there's that. And then, of course, I do the Paranormal Radio Network shows on Monday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And that is anything goes. I mean, I've gone all over the map with that. And I've got some more very interesting shows coming up in the future on there. Eventually, I'm going to do what I do on there on RBN, you know, mix it up a little bit here and there. But there's just so much more leeway on a network like that. You know, you can literally just do about any, just, you know, people are very open-minded, the audience that I have there. And they just eat up pretty much anything I talk about. Last week I talked about the Apollo missions, you know, how scandalous the whole thing was. It never happened. You know, we have not landed men on the moon.
I've seen many different documentaries exposing the moon hoax. You know, first of all, I thought it was ridiculous to ever think of the possibility that there is a hoax of the moon landing. But then I see so much evidence that doesn't add up. The shadows, there's so many things that people are not aware of. There are so many photographs too sharp for being taken from the belly. You know, you have this equipment that they have. How can you have always?
I only came to this conclusion not even 2 years ago. It was the late summer of 2005, when I came to this conclusion. So, you know, the process of learning is ongoing. The clincher for me was the pictures. You know, when I started seeing all these inconsistencies and impossibilities, I realized, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. And these are pictures that have been on the front cover of major scientific journals for decades on end now. And
Yeah, there's also a theory, by the way, that they maybe went to the moon, but part they had to make some additional photographs to fake that because they expecting something strange happening on the moon, and so they had partly to cover that up, and that's the reason you see fake photos to cover up that they actually had UFO encounters. So that's the other conspiracy theory, I would say.
Right. In fact, a spokesman for Hasselblad that made the cameras for NASA was asked about the problems, you know, with the pictures. And not only the problems, but the fact that the pictures are always perfectly lined up, you know, they're centered. The focal length is perfect. The focus is perfectly adjusted, which wasn't possible for the astronauts. They couldn't manipulate those fine mechanisms on the camera because their gloves were blown up, filled with air. They had basically balloons on their hands, you know. And the cameras were mounted on their chest. They couldn't look through the viewfinder. So, you know, Hasselblad was asked, how is this possible? How did the astronauts do this? The pictures are basically flawless as far as focal length and focus and, you know, centering. And he said, well, you know, it's feasible that NASA would fake these pictures because they're going to be appearing on the covers of important journals around the world, and they didn't want sloppy-looking pictures. He actually admitted that, you know. So basically,
Yeah, you have some more strange revelations concerning, you do some research and or you heard some strange mysteries about when a tree, especially the big trees in the red forest of California, the redwoods, there's something mysterious about trees. Can you explain why that you just recently discussed this with me and I found it amazing what you discovered. There's something deeply mysterious about trees. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, coming back to the theme of truth being stranger than fiction, I'm reading this book, actually several books, but this one in particular written back in the early 70s by a guy named Peter Tompkins. He had written several books on, like, you know, the Great Pyramid and Pyramids of Egypt. That's when first how I got introduced to him. And then I read in the back of the book that he had these other books. One of them is called The Secret Life of Plants. So I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll do a show on that. So I got the book, and I've been reading it, and I just finished it recently. And he brings out some astonishing stuff. In fact, stuff that I had asked myself years ago but never really got a satisfactory answer. I always wondered, why is it, no matter where you go, you see you know, big trees, especially, yeah, like out in the redwood forest of California, those trees are so big you can drive a Mack truck through them. In fact, literally, one of the trees, they hollowed out the center, and they built a road through it. And you can literally drive a truck right through the center of the tree. It's so massive. And I always wondered, how is it that these big trees, or even the smaller trees that you have in your neighborhood, why is it, as big as they are, that you don't see the ground around them dipping downward? You know, why don't you see this big dip in the ground? Because obviously, for the trees to have grown that huge, that wide, that tall, they must have drawn up a tremendous amount of soil from the ground and converted that soil into wood and bark and leaves. And yet we find that the ground around the trees, no matter where you go, no matter how big the trees are, the ground is not disturbed at all. It doesn't show any sign of having lost any mass. And you find this when you mow your lawn, too. Year after year after year, tons and tons of grass are cut and you know, raked up and hauled away to the dump. And yet the level of your lawn does not diminish. It stays the same. How can that be? How can tons of material be removed and yet the soil is not disturbed? It doesn't lose mass. Well, in this book, he brought it up, and I'm like, son of a gun, I always wondered that. Well, here it is. This guy addressed this decades ago. And his conclusion, in fact, many scientists he quotes from, their conclusion is that the trees are actually transmuting. They're engaging in alchemy. They're converting water into other elements. And, you know, it has to be that way. Because one of the experiments he refers to that scientists have conducted, they planted a tree in a pot, and they measured the amount of soil. You know, they used about 300 pounds of soil. And they noticed that in the coming years, as the tree grew bigger and bigger and bigger, the amount of soil in the pot didn't change. They took the tree out and weighed the soil, and it was still 300 pounds. And yet this massive tree had grown, and you know, exponentially, you know, 10, 15 times the size it was when they first put it in the pot. And it grew in size and in weight exponentially, and yet the amount of soil in the pot had not changed 1 ounce. 1 gram.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what do you think it is? You think it's kind of alchemy, you say?
Well, yeah. I mean, all they gave this tree was water. That's it. So obviously the tree is transferring or transforming, or better yet, transmuting. It has to be. It's transmuting the water into other elements. It's converting water into, you know, carbon and other organic materials without even utilizing the soil itself. You know, other experiments have been conducted, even animals, chickens, for example. They put chickens on, you know, high protein diets with almost no calcium at all, and they noticed that the amount of calcium in the legs that they ate, the eggs that they laid, did not change. Even though they were on a low-calcium diet, they were still laying eggs with the same amount of calcium, and they weren't drawing calcium from their bones. They measured, you know, their bone density. The bone density hadn't changed. So it looks like chickens as well, regardless what you feed them. Even if their diets are low in calcium, they're still able to produce eggs that have the same amount of calcium in them as chickens that are fed high-calcium diets.
So the question is, where does it come from?
Right. I mean, it can't just you know, come out of nowhere. They must be converting other substances that they're taking into their bodies, literally converting it into calcium. You know, we know that this is possible. It's no secret anymore that alchemy is reality. We can do this with atom smashers. We can turn, you know, lead into uranium or vice versa, you know. But it appears that plants and perhaps animals, maybe even our own cells, are able to do this to some degree without involving atom smashing and radiation leaks, that we can do this ourselves in a way that science is yet to uncover. But it's obvious this has to be what's going on. Where are these elements coming from?
So it's almost like a story of that something comes out of nothing. You know, there's a claim that in quantum mechanics it is possible that, you know, first there was nothing and then there is everything. So the question is, if there's a so-called Big Bang theory, then what happened before the Big Bang? And if it's possible from, I don't know if you've heard about neutrinos. Some neutrinos can exist forever, and some neutrinos can only exist for 10 minutes.
Right.
So the question is, how is that possible?
And neutrinos can pass through the Earth as readily as if they were going right through empty space.
Yes. So there are many, many unanswered questions, and especially if you go to Wikipedia and look for Google search Wikipedia and then unsolved problems in physics, it's amazing what they admit, what the scientists admit, what they see with their own eyes, with their own testings, but they cannot explain it. So we are, you know, the world. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah, reality is definitely a stranger than fiction. In fact, when it comes to the subatomic world, you know, quantum physics, the rules are totally rewritten. In fact, there are no rules that we know of yet. It's just total chaos. I mean, there's so many unlimited possibilities in the quantum world that they're finding out that they just cannot make sense of it. You know, the idea that you can take an electron, fire it in a chamber at a specific target, and they notice that the electron reaches the target, but it gets there late. You know, there's a delay. And so they were wondering, what's going on here? How come it's reaching the target, but it's getting there much later than what it should? What is delaying it? They couldn't figure it out. So they put sensors all over the inside of the chamber, fired the electron again, and what they discovered, to their amazement, was the electron bounced all over the chamber before it finally came to rest at the target it was aimed at, implying that the electron seems to have intelligence. It knows where it's supposed to go, and it does eventually wind up there, but not before it dilly-dallies and bounces around the chamber first. You know, and then, of course, I'm sure you know about the double-slit experiments there where they take a single electron and fire it through a plate that has two slots.
Yes,
and,
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and it'll act like a wave, like it's a light wave, you know, it'll pass through both slots and produce the interference pattern. But if they put monitors by the slots to try to figure out how it's one particle is able to go through two slots at the same time, then it acts like a particle, not a wave, and it'll only go through one slot.
Yes, that, like what you just described, you can see footages of that on, if you just Google David Deutsch, and David Deutsch is from Cambridge University in England, and he talks about that he can prove that we have parallel universes. I mean, it's amazing. And he talks about qubits and quantum bits.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, you know, when you talk about this stuff, just a few years ago, you would have been crazy, you know. The scientific world would have laughed at you. But now they're writing volumes of material on this, you know, different universes, different dimensions. You know, some think now there's at least 10, maybe 12 different dimensions, and most of them are only accessible in the subatomic world, so we might never be able to tap into that.
But there's also a very exciting a testing going on in Switzerland in this CERN program, and it will be launched, I think, in November or December this year. I'm not sure, but there will be a very important testing, and they even can create a tiny wormhole or tiny black hole, and that it can also be dangerous, by the way, that experiment. And it is the largest magnets they use, and then in a huge circle, and then have particle accelerators, and then they're going to smash particles very, very fast. And what I've heard, it's one of the biggest science projects ever on the planet, and it is, I think, over 100 nations are working on this project.
Well, what scares me is their research with antimatter. That's another thing that they're working on. And
yes, that's true. Antimatter is also being produced. Yeah.
I mean, the potential there, this goes way beyond atomic weapons and you know, hydrogen bombs. This stuff is, I mean, you could literally wipe the planet out.
Yeah, this is really dangerous. So we need some help from extraterrestrials, I guess, because the children found the matches.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, they're messing with forces they don't even understand themselves. And I mean, the potential for complete annihilation, never mind the planet, I mean, the solar system, the power that could be unleashed with stuff like this. And, you know, this is not theory anymore. They acknowledge this. They know that there is this tremendous potential.
Another another subject is that you became very into researching everything that has to do with 9/11. It was an inside job, and not only that was a conspiracy, but that you actually more and more evidence is to be shown if people only want to know. That's the whole thing. But what is the first time that you investigated something like 9/11, and what triggered you to make a book? Because you produced a book, Piecing the Fog of 9/11. But what was the first time that you ever decided, now I'm going to take this deeply serious and I want to make a full-time investigation on this?
Well, I pretty much suspected from the word go that it was an inside job. In fact, I knew it was because I had been aware of how this government actually works going back to the early 90s, you know, my college days. And so once this happened, you know, I had read Zbigniew Brzezinski's book. I knew that he was someone to pay close attention to, because every time he says something, usually within a few years, what he says is going to happen happens. Simply because.
So you are also, you're also watching this with a historian perspective of view, of course.
Yeah, right. I mean, not that this guy's a prophet, but I mean, he's one of the top foreign policy planners. So when he says something's going to happen, you know it is because he's one of the ones who plans these things. So in 1997, he wrote in his book, The Grand Chessboard, that in coming years, the United States is going to need to go into Eurasia, i.e. Afghanistan, to build a pipeline across that region to exploit the oil and natural gas in the Caspian Sea. He says there's a tremendous amount there, and, you know, there's a lot of wealth to be exploited there, and if the U.S. wants to remain the dominant force in the world, we're going to have to take over that region. And he said in order to do that, to catalyze the American public behind us in support of this agenda, we're going to need to have a massive, widely perceived, direct external threat. So I knew that there was something in the works. Something was brewing. And when 9/11 came along, I was highly suspicious because I knew that the 93 bombing attempt was a scam. The FBI had an infiltrator working with the group that was planning the bombing, and he said that he could stop it if they wanted him to. He could replace the explosives with a harmless powder, and they said, no, let them go ahead with it. We'll take over from here. And, of course, we know what happened. They did go ahead with it. It just happened that it didn't go the way they planned. The buildings didn't come down, but if they did, the FBI's fingerprints would have been all over that. They wanted it to happen. You know, they were going to exploit it to take away our rights. We would have lost our rights through things like the Patriot Act a long time ago. That's what they had intended. And, the FBI, of course, did benefit from it, not as much as they wanted to, but they got huge increases of funding from Congress, you know, for, quote, anti-terrorism. And then I knew that the 95 Oklahoma City bombing was a scam, you know, that has the government's fingerprints all over it as well. That got them a lot more anti-terrorism
funding. And Waco?
And Waco and so many other instances. So, you know, when 9/11 came along, I'm like, yeah, here we go, business as usual. And then, I knew that they had been pushing to go into Afghanistan. I wasn't surprised when a couple of weeks later they were announcing that Osama bin Laden is in Afghanistan. I'm like, yep, there we go. I knew they wanted to go in there because, you know, they wanted to get the pipeline. Unocal and Halliburton and Bechtel were lobbying Congress. They had spent $10 billion to survey the area and prepare for construction of the pipeline. And then, of course, the Taliban cut the deal off with them and decided to go with an Argentine company called Brightus instead. Well, that aroused their wrath. They began lobbying Congress, you know, to invade Afghanistan so they could still get their pipeline and wouldn't lose that $10 billion investment. Well, here we are. That pipeline is under construction now. It's going to be completed, in fact, probably in the next year or two. And we'll see the oil flowing out of there as well, just like we're seeing the opium business booming in Afghanistan again.
When you were writing your book, what was your first time that you started to write a book about 9/11?
Well, it started out as just a 19-page outline. I just wanted to make people aware of some of the major problems, you know, that existed with it. I wasn't intending to write a book. It was just an outline, and it was based on, you know, just paying attention to the stories that were coming out, and I had read a couple books, one of which, by the way, was David Icke's Alice in Wonderland book there. That was one of the first ones I read. And I realized, wow, he's right on top of this thing. You know, that came out right away in January 2002, not even, 4 or 5 months after the tragedy. And so I just took off from there. 19 pages became like 30 and then 50 and then 100. And now, you know, the book's almost 200 pages loaded with almost 500 references. And, I continue to add to it all the time because it's just more stuff that keeps coming out. It's incredible.
What is your answer to the question on how can you say that it was an inside job? Because some people believe, oh, you mean George Bush. You know, you say, of course, George Bush is just a puppet. It's much larger.
He can't even tie his own shoes. But you know, the corrupt elements within the government did this, and, you know, he knows what went on. He doesn't care. He's profiting from this. He's making tremendous amounts, not only of money, but gaining massive amounts of power. Every time we turn around, he's passing more and more legislation. In just the past 6 months, he's passed 3 different laws that give him basically dictatorial powers, so that in the case of another terrorist attack, which I'm trying to warn people and many others, that they're planning, they're going to implement martial law here. He will implement these laws that are already in the, on the books, ready to go.
I also made a statement that if there was any kind of small nuclear device being detonated anywhere on this planet, not necessarily in America, is enough to trigger a total police state in America.
Yeah, it'll be multifaceted in how they'll exploit it. They'll not only implement martial law here, we'll have a complete dictatorship. We pretty much do already, but it'll be official. We'll have tanks rolling down the streets complete with you know, the Gestapo. And but
what people don't realize is that, of course, the FEMA camps and the prison camps are lucrative. They are actually have cheap labor, and that what in the past, when people were complaining about prison camps being used in Russia, in communist China, in communist Russia, now the Americans doing it. Now they're profiting from having cheap labor from in prison camps, and a lot of people don't know that. But the FEMA camps and the prison camp are a very, very lucrative business, you know, making profit from it.
Yeah, and nobody can deny that we have them here. They're building them all the time. I mean, this is in the mainstream media now. There was an article a few years ago in the Los Angeles Times called Ashcroft's Hellish Nightmare. It talked about his plans, and they're now being implemented, to build all over the country FEMA-run concentration camps to house dissenters in case of a you know, massive unrest or some emergency national crisis situation. You know, there'd be rioting, looting, where FEMA can, or just protests in general, FEMA can take these people and house them by the thousands in these camps. And here, lo and behold, here we are. They're building them all over the place. Nobody can deny it anymore. This is a fact. They're doing it. Hey, look, we did it in World War II with the Japanese. They intend to do it now with American citizens in general across the board.
And the first time that I saw this FEMA camps was this documentary of Linda Thompson. She was also in Europe working for the NATO, and she's an attorney, and she has some knowledge of the law. And Linda Thompson documentary called America Under Siege, you know, talking about black unmarked helicopters and FEMA camps. You, if you see that documentary, she's very thorough in explaining. And it was, I think, in the early 90s, explaining, and I showed this, by the way, on Dutch local television, this America Under Siege. It's, for me, very convincing in that time that they're working for a huge network of underground bases and
that was back in
prison camps.
Yeah. That was a while ago, too. I mean, it's gotten worse since then. But, you know, all of that was being done in lieu of several executive orders that were passed that were actually written up by our good friend Mr. Oliver North, now works for Fox News. At the time, he worked in the basement of the White House with the National Security Council and drafted up these orders, which called for, in the case of a national emergency crisis, you know, they'd be implemented by FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency. It called for rounding up dissenters and hauling them off to government-supervised labor camps, i.e. concentration camps. So, yeah, what she was bringing out was the after effects of that, the actual construction of the... And, you know, she showed how these facilities that she visited and filmed had fortress fences built around them designed to keep people in, not out.
Yes, people must realize that if you have so-called... you know, to rescue people for if there's any kind of disaster, that's what they claim. You know, yeah, we will rescue you, and it's all for the purpose of disaster management. But if that is the case, why is it that the fences are so designed to keep people in?
And, you know, anybody can go Google this, look up the Georgia Guidestones on a hill.
Yeah, can you talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a set of four granite stones that have been erected on top of this hill in Georgia. And on either side of each stone, in 8 different languages, there's a list of 10 items that the elites who erected these stones want to see implemented to bring about world government. What's scary is, most scary is number one, which calls for population reduction of the world's population down to 500 million. Oh, yeah. which, of course, as you know, is a very small fragment of the current population. How do they propose to do this? Through extermination. And
also to not allow people to have access to alternative medicine, for instance.
Yeah. And they're going to selectively exterminate those, of course, who are not politically correct, who aren't going along with the ball game, who aren't hailing DeFuhrer, who has stolen two elections and still resides in the White House as the unelected dictator. Yeah, it's very obvious what's going on to those who do their homework, who do the research. If you just sit back and watch BoobTube, the controlled media, and it is controlled, then naturally this stuff is going to sound crazy. But it's only crazy because
you've been dumbed down.
What's that?
By the way, talking about controlled media, there are two important documentaries for everyone to study on Google Video. That is Decorporation, the movie, because there's more on it, but you can actually see a preview, but it's very long. A total is 7 hours, but you can actually see about 2 hours of the 7 hours DVD. It's a new version. So Decorporation is one of the best expose of the and they won over 27 awards, international awards, and they's not been shown to the mass media. Now that's interesting because the mass media has been exposed. So who's going to boycott this documentary? That is the mass media, because they are corporate controlled. So it is interesting when someone is trying to expose the abuse of power by multinationals in the media. And then you have the good reasons why they never want to show this on view, so that everybody knows that they've been exposed. And they claim that we are living in the land of the free. You see what I mean? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, like I always say, we're in the land of the free and home of the slave. You know, I wanted to mention, if people actually want to read my 9/11 book, fully documented, I guarantee after you read that, you will have no doubt it was an inside job. I also have a book called The New World Disorder, which documents this scam conspiracy for world government. 9/11 is just a small piece of the puzzle leading us toward world government. It's just another one of the scams that the elites have pulled on us to lead us toward that ultimate agenda. But anybody can go to lulu.com and just search for my books by my name. It's probably the best way, easiest way to find them. Just search for Charles Giuliani, and that's spelled G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I. He's like the former New York mayor, I'm afraid, the same spelling. And you can find them that way.
But, the title of your book is Piercing the Fog of 9/11.
Right. And the other one is The New World Disorder. It's a much broader coverage of what's going on in the world. I, you know, cover the history of this whole thing, how it happened, how they hijacked our media, how they hijacked our education system, our banking system, how the income tax has been a fraud that's been perpetuated on us now since 1913, enabling them to pickpocket the American people and get them to fund this enslavement campaign that's going on. I mean, we're literally paying for our own enslavement. That's what we're doing.
Yes, the same with... as you know, almost on every aspect of our lives, the food what we eat, the medicine that we take, the water that has been fluidization of water, almost every aspect of our lives has been influenced by multinational big corporation. Corporatism is the biggest fascism, if you do some research. And that this influence is being heavier and grander and bigger as ever before.
You know, they've got the average person now on so many poisonous drugs. I mean, that's what it is. These medications are poison. There are some instances where they're, you know, absolutely vital. People would die without certain medications. But, I mean, it's way, way overrated. You know, if you have a kid that is hyperactive because probably you're feeding them too much junk food, he can't sit still for too long. Instead of taking him off the junk food, no, it's much easier to put Junior on Ritalin. So by the time Junior graduates, he's a complete vegetable. You know, he's dependent on these medications. Now he'll graduate from Ritalin to Prozac. And, I mean, this stuff, it's not natural. It's leading to all kinds of diseases. It's causing many of the symptoms that it professes to treat, and certainly not cure. It doesn't cure anybody. It's a treatment. They don't want to cure you of anything. Most of the time, you don't have anything that needs curing. You just need to get off the junk food. But in any case, it doesn't cure you. It's like a drunk. You know, as long as he has the bottle, he's fine. But if he doesn't have the bottle, he goes into depression, or he gets violent, or, you know, he's got to have the bottle. That keeps him under control. Doesn't make his problems go away. It just drowns him. And that's all the medications do at best. But very often, it's worse than that. They actually create, like I said, you know, Ritalin. Some of the side effects of Ritalin are hyperactivity, aberrant behavior, depression, suicidal tendencies. It's unbelievable. And yet they put people on these drugs for those reasons. It actually increases. It's a fact that every one of the shooters at Columbine was on Ritalin. The shooter in the Virginia Tech, Cho, he was on Ritalin.
So the question is, how far must we go to really become fed up? I mean, there are so many examples of abuse of power, in my opinion, and there must be, in my opinion, there must be a law for corporatism to have so much influence on the politicians and on our reality that they actually buy out scientists, they buy out the pharmaceutical, you know,
it's really not new. What's going on today is it's an old game. What's new is that it's going on in a massive scale now with the television. You know, the propaganda is able to bombard people 24/7, so it's much more prevalent than it's ever been before. But it's the same game. You know, in ancient times, you would go to the village witch doctor, and hocus pocus, he'd give you some placebo thing that he'd suck you dry for, you know, with a big fat bill. But you felt good because he told you were going to be fine. And sometimes you would feel fine. Your disease might not go away, but you'd feel better, and you'd tell everybody how much better you felt, and they all run to him, and he'd sucker them too. You know, in the Dark Ages, it was the priests, you know. They would lie to you and tell you the earth was flat and burn you at the stake if you said otherwise. But you felt good. The placebo effect of being told that you're fine, your sins are forgiven you if you went to confession, you felt good. It was a lie, but nevertheless.
But, you know, what I found interesting is that the Christians have difficulty with that. Of course, the people who are using alternative medicine in the past, they were called witches, and it's kind of interesting. Jesus walked over water, and nobody else could because he is the Son of God. But the moment that when a witch is doing walking over water, she is accused being a witch. It's kind of funny because they had in the Middle Ages they had this sort of rope around the neck and a stone, and they say if you go down, then you're proven innocent, but you die as well. It's kind of ridiculous, of course.
And if you float
and you can walk over water like Jesus did, then you're also, bad. It's also bad. It's kind of silly.
Right. It's crazy. Well, you know, I don't know if you've ever looked into the Libro Nero. That was the Inquisitor's handbook in the Dark Ages. It used to be on display at the Vatican, but it got a lot of negative attention in more recent decades, so they decided to take it into the back room, and now it's never seen the light of day since. But very interesting book. Basically, it would tell the Dominican priests that ran the Inquisition that torture has ever been the most effective means of gaining a good confession. And then it said that if during the torture the victim does not confess, keep torturing. If he confesses only in part, that means he's capable of being guilty of all, consider him guilty. Naturally, if he confesses to everything, he's guilty and kill him anyway. But in other words, it didn't matter what he said. Well, it didn't matter what you said or didn't say. You were going to be tortured and ultimately killed. So, you know, you might as well just not even say anything. And but, you know, this is what we're dealing with today with the Military Tribunals Act that Bush passed, the Military Commissions Act, I should say. It enables people at Guantanamo to do this to the detainees there. And by the way, I need to mention, it just came out in the London Independent the other day, out of the almost 400 abductees that have been arrested and brought to Guantanamo over the past 5 years, there's only been one conviction. They have tortured hundreds of people, and only one conviction has come out of this. And you know, the way the Military Commissions Act is worded, you can be convicted based on hearsay evidence. You're not allowed to know who your accuser is, and you're not allowed to know what the charges are. This is exactly what they did to the victims in the Dark Ages. And you have no legal representation afforded you. And once they find you guilty, that's it. You either get a life or death sentence with the military tribunals.
I never understand that the Democrats will go for this, and even helping Bush becoming a dictator if there's a chaos.
Well, unfortunately, I understand it simply because they're sold out to the same corporate interests. There's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. They're all the same. They're all sellouts. They're all getting their pockets fattened with contributions from the same lobbyist groups, mostly IPAC.
Can you talk about the alternative that is around Ron Paul? I think it's the only genuine alternative. And can you talk about him, how it's going the last 2-3 weeks?
Ron Paul is just taking the other Republican candidates to the cleaners, just raking them over the coals. He's beating the living daylights out of them because he talks real issues, no nonsense. He knows what the problems are, and he knows how to fix them. And he's been winning every single debate, but the media has been giving him almost a complete blackout, with only a few exceptions, like Lou Dobbs, who's had him on. He's been on Comedy Central and a few other networks. But, I mean, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, all of them, and, of course, Fox, are just blackballing this guy. Even Gallup came out with a phony poll saying that he has 0% support. Hogwash. He's been beating the pants off of every other candidate in the debates. MSNBC had a poll the other day showing that, he had 61% support. The next one in line was Giuliani at 10%. So he was whipping the pants off by a 51% margin. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, maybe they are afraid that people are going to see through the masquerade and the farce and the manipulation that is going on. Because if the polls are telling the truth, then it is extremely difficult if there is another election that he is close to the. I don't think so. I think he is overwhelming.
I fear for the man that they'll kill him. You know, if he did win, and I don't see how, unfortunately,
he could be the first president. Yeah, he could be the first president of the United States thanks to the alternative news networks.
Right. I mean, I don't see how he can lose if it's a fair election. We know the elections aren't fair. But, you know, let's say they try to rig it and they still fail because the margin of support he has is so huge, even if he gets in the office, they'll kill him. They absolutely will kill him like they did with Kennedy. They won't tolerate it. So, I got to tip my hat to the man. He's got the courage of 10,000 footmen, 10,000 soldiers. He's a real trooper, and I hope the people wake up and start paying more attention as they have been. I hope this continues and that they realize that Giuliani, Obama, Hillary, every single one of them are corporate whores. What's that?
Yes. Ron Paul has his own webpage. I think it's ronpaul2008.org. Is that correct?
I believe, yeah.
Oh, that's
all. 2008. Yeah.
Yes, I hope that he will win because I think he's the only one who's talking about the Federal Reserve and scam. Mm. And have you heard any news on the app, the one who is being attacked by, raided by marshals? Have you heard about that?
Ed Brown. Yeah, he's actually not very far from me. He lives only about an hour north of me. In fact, I called in one day on a show he was on, and we were talking for a little bit, and it turns out he grew up in the next town over from me, so we had a lot in common there. But anyway, last I heard, as of this morning, I guess, the feds have called off the raid, at least for now anyway, because they have so much attention on him, so many reporters, alternative press reporters, not mainstream, of course. But this has gotten a lot of attention from the Patriot community. It's gotten a lot of support. And they realize, the eyes are upon them. So, at least for now anyway, they're backing off of that. So,
but they also use helicopters, and I've seen a person that was letting the dog out, that he was saying that when he was letting the dog out, he's been ambushed by people out of the bushes with dark suits, and then people said,
"Well, there were shots fired. There were shots fired at his dog."
Yeah.
I mean, this
and
is
he was walking. He was walking from left to right, and then trying. Yelling, "Don't shoot me! Don't shoot me! I'm unarmed." And at that when he was captured, he was to be like an informant. He has to brief them. It's all there and who's going out and in. And he must be helping the policeman. He was just a supporter, I think. If you see that, how they treat just a normal supporter of Ed Brown.
Right. He was just a friend.
That in itself is ridiculous. You know, the total obsessive of use of
people need to realize this isn't new. This has been going on for quite a while. I mean, you go back to the Randy Weaver in Ruby Ridge there in Idaho. This is the same exact thing. This guy had his 15-year-old son shot in the back. He had no gun on in his hand. He had a gun in his holster, but he not in his hand. He wasn't armed, you know, at the time, as far as being able to, you know, he was no threat. He wasn't looking to shoot anybody. He was out there taking his dog out for a walk. They killed the dog. They shot him in the back. And then later, a day or two later, his wife came out on the front porch because the husband got up early in the morning to sneak out into the barn to get some food supplies. She woke up and saw he was gone. She got nervous. She ran out on the porch. She yelled out for him. Suddenly a bullet you know, comes flying out and kills her right there on the spot. The only thing she was armed with was her 10-month-old baby girl, Elisheba. They shot her in the face while holding a baby. This is unbelievable. Yeah, I think
there are special units. They actually are exercising like almost like the SS did. And by the way, the one who are behind this scheme, the founders of it are actually have heritage or roots from the Nazis in the SS. A lot of people don't know that, but there is a connection between the behavior of certain people and their roots and where they come from. So some of them are
grandfather.
And not only that, but But I don't know, why is it that people are not interested in to know that the CIA was founded by ex-SS and ex-Nazis? Over 2,000 people illegally came to America to through Project Paperclip. But most important is that you can actually look it up. The CIA has its own budget, not to be overseen by congressional oversight. And they congressional allowed it to happen, you know, that there is no accountability of what they do with the money. And the moment when that happened, they could actually use also money from for instance, selling drugs. So-called war on drugs is actually to profit from it. And then having this black budget. So the black budgets of the CIA and other covert secret secret agencies, most of them, they don't have to be accountable, held accountable. Now, that in itself shouts on change. If people don't realize that, that there's no oversight, no congressional oversight on this shadowy government structure, and we talk about trillions of dollars.
Right. Yeah, it's astonishing what's going on right out in the open. I mean, you just do a little digging. You don't have to go very far, and you'll see that it's just a rat's nest of criminal activity that is mind-boggling. Most people just, you know, would cringe. They couldn't handle finding out how bad things are, but they need to. They need to become aware.
Whether but by the way, if you think of it, if you think about it, there is corruption almost everywhere you look. If you look in the pharmaceutical mafia, you know, there's already been a documentary called Sicko, but there's another documentary also exposing the pharmaceutical mafia. And then you have, of course, the food will be soon, the supplements, the herbs, the vitamins will be made illegal. A lot of people don't know
Codex,
that, but Codex Alimentarius. So all of that, if you look at it, wherever you look, there's abuse of power, there's corruption. And all the signals together is much more than what happened in the 30s when the Nazis came to power. So when people say, you know, when I was, you know, if you teach your children about the Holocaust, that's what we do in the Netherlands, and I think also in America, you will be taught at schools about what happened in the Holocaust. And when you are teaching history to the children, what is the true purpose of it? It's that you are saying never ever again. You see what I mean? That's what the purpose is. But then when you talk about what is happening right now, then people do their fingers in their ears. You see what I mean?
Right.
And I'll tell you, strange.
We talked about some of these alternative studies, you know, like quantum physics and the mysteries of it and alternative technologies. And a lot of this stuff the government either has a good handle on or at least they've made a lot of progress in this direction than what the general public is aware of. And, you know, they want to maintain their monopoly of power. And the way to do that is to keep us in the dark, keep us at least 20, 30, 40 years behind them. You know, the most modern computer that is out on the market today that we think is the most advanced, I'll tell you, they've got stuff that goes way beyond that that you'll never see for another 40, 50 years. They do this on...
I know, for instance, that they have holographic nanotechnology holodrives that can actually store with two lasers, and it will be released in 2009, with two lasers, they can actually, with very thin lasers, they can actually store in the terabytes and very fast access. And so you have a 3D holographic nanotechnology drives, and it talks about, I think it was over 400 terabytes. Now, 1 tera is 1,000 gigabytes. So if that is possible, then they can use it to, of course, this kind of technology can be used for face recognition software, for Big Brother to be more and more powerful, because all of that, what's happening around the planet, they even have the artificial intelligence to predict if something strange is going to happen. Oracle is a program, I think you know about that. They had certain software, artificial intelligence, they predict 9/11. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
That something major is going to happen because of the strange behavior of the market, of the stock exchange, and do you know about that?
Oh yeah, there's indications insider trading's going on again. I mean, every time you see this happen, you know that the gig is up. You've got a lot of international elites that are pulling their investments out of American corporations. They're pulling away from the dollar. You know, they're putting their assets in other currencies, and you know, it's very obvious that, you know, they're, it's not just that they foresee a collapse coming, they're orchestrating a collapse. And you know, the old saying, you know, a corrupt leader will loot his country just before he knows it's going to collapse. Well, that's what's going on. They're looting us right now. I mean, trillions of dollars are just disappearing. And you know, this administration is just laughing all the way to the bank. They're getting ready to pull the rug out from under us. I'll tell you, people who have their lives built around their finances are going to be in for a miserable disappointment. Just like in 1929, you know, you had millionaires leaping out of high-rise windows. Millionaires, obviously, that weren't connected with the boys at the top, you know, rolling the dice. But this is what they're doing.
Yeah, when all Big Brother tools are implemented and people are being chipped, and that moment when that is happening, And then there will strike, and then they're going to say to us, okay, what are you going to do about this? It's already happening. Now they're going to speed up their abuse of power more and more and more. It's obvious that they are not serving the public interest anymore. They're serving the multinational giants. And if that is the case, there comes a point that the police that will say, yeah, we have to uphold the law. But then you have to ask the question, but who are making the laws? No, that are the people who are serving not the public's interest anymore. They're serving the big corporations. So slowly you have this draconian laws that is connected to the big corporations' interest. So in European Parliament, the European Union is all about a new constitution being pushed and being actually sold to the public and forced upon us. And we said no, and also the French said no. But we have soon another a referendum to say yes or no. But they already say, if the Netherlands are saying no again, they have to get out of the European Parliament or European Union. And I would embrace that, because I don't want to be part of this fascistic state. Because I believe that this whole United Europe is all about big corporations having easier control over lawmaking process.
Just like what's happening now with this emerging Pan-American Union, which most Americans still don't know about. They're totally oblivious to this. But as far as Bush is concerned, it's a done deal. He's already signed it, and it's due to kick in 3 years.
Yes. I want to ask everybody to go to Infowars.com. I'm not a Christian, but I sincerely believe that what Alex Jones is doing is very important. And, of course, other alternative news networks. Can you give me some tips of rebellious anti-New World Order websites? Can you give some tips, Imalek?
Well, my personal favorite is whatreallyhappened.com. I get my news from there every day, actually, most of my news.
So whatreallyhappened.com, okay.
Yeah, Mike Rivero is the author of that.
Okay, and we have to round up because the time is up. But I wish to thank you so much for being a part of Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on bbsradio.com. And you are doing much more than only conspiracies. You're also into strange archaeology and mysteries. And you give also a part of the Untold Mysteries Radio every Sunday. And give you some plugins of your websites.
Yeah, there's Truth Hurts,
hertz.com, 911blog.com. And then, of course, if you're interested in getting my books, you just go to Lulu, L-U-L-U.com, and search for my name, Charles Giuliani, G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I, and you'll see all the books I have up there. I've got four to date. I'm going to be having more in the coming weeks and months.
Okay, thank you so much, because time is up. I appreciate it, and I wish you all the best, and good luck with your own radio shows, Charlie.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Okay, all the best. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye.